Hello. So thank you so much for coming over and taking your time out to come to listen to Unity. This presentation is all about how you can actually create games for Windows, Windows Surface, the Windows Phone 8. And here's like a little example. That's the character is inspired after me, of course. Where we have a character and environment, with sky, 3D objects, and the character is running, and the character can jump, and the character can attack other characters, and particles come out, can turn left and right, backwards, and look around. We also have the same game in a first person, and I activate my first person viewport. Okay, let's play. And then I can play this game. Oh, see, I have two times. Okay, hold on a second. Just gonna. That's my mobile version. Okay, let's play. And then we can play this game. So first, we're gonna start with an first person, and then from there we take it for the Surface and the iPhone, for the Windows Phone 8, and then build it to make it for third person. Okay. So first, I'm going to start here with a little PowerPoint presentation, okay, to explain a little bit who we are as a company and what is Unity actually, the software. Okay, as I said before, okay, I'm just going to go here, start here. As before, I'm Carl Calvert, I'm a product evangelist at Unity. You can always feel free to contact me, and it's here my Twitter and my email. If you have more technical questions, feel free to reach out. As showing this picture, because this is our, almost our full team, who's dedicated to this hard, to this software, to Unity, to make that the game engine for you to use it. Our Japan team is not there. We have 14 offices around the world, and we have here an office actually in San Francisco, and also tonight also Corey Johnson is here, who is one of our field engineers. If you have very technical questions, he's more than happy to help you out. We have Matt Finney. If you want to talk more about licensing, he's also available for you, okay? But where Unity comes from and really in development, from three guys who wanted to make a game, but the game was not the greatest quality. So they decided to actually to use the technology they created to make the game and so that you others can make the game. And they didn't start from like a corporate environment, they started from three guys in a basement, and they wanted to carry on that philosophy, okay? And that's why they call it the democratization of the game development. And everybody should be able to create games, okay? easily learn how to make games, and have access to the software. And it's all about serving the people who want to make games. Okay? What is Unity? It's a solution for you to make multi-platform games, where you can take your Archont, drag it in, create an interactivity, and then build it to all different platforms. Tonight we have Microsoft, so we support now to build for Windows 8 and Windows 8, the phone and the Surface. And there's also other platforms. What's really cool about it is if you made a game for another platform, the only thing you have to do is click build to another platform, such as the Windows 8 phone. For people who have used a game engine or come from an art background or from a script background or from an audio background, it's easy to learn Unity because like importing Artwork is just drag and drop coming from the major art packages like 3ds Max, Maya, Softimage. For people from an audio background, FMods. People from the light mapping or scripting, you can use C# and Java scripting to create your game directly in Unity. We have about... Those numbers always get faster updated than I can put them on my PowerPoint. But we have now about 1.5 million people using Unity and 300,000 actively users. There's a lot of games made with Unity. You might have played some of them, such as Temple Run. If you have never heard of Temple Run, we have a huge issue here, I think. Okay. But more and more games are coming also to the Windows App Store. And here's a nice example, Cheesecraft. Was created first for another platform, and then in one click, it was built to the Windows platform. If you want to get Unity, you can always go to our website and download for free and start from there to learn. There's a lot of tutorials on the internet and a lot of websites who help you to learn Unity, books and movie files. But we just also announced a section on our website called Learn, where it takes you how to make a game from begin to end, really from how to import the artwork, how to script, and how to export it. If you want to learn a lot about Unity, I really invite you to come over to Vancouver. It's not far from here. August 28th to the 30th, where you can learn about, I interact with all the guys who make the software, people who come to speak how they made the games and overcome their problems. But what I'm here about tonight is to show you how you actually can make your own game, okay? And that's what we're going to start with, okay? Later on, Corey and I will be here, Matt, to answer your questions. Well, feel free to ask questions during the presentation too. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to start with to make this game from begin to end. First, I'm going to explain the Unity software, the editor, how it works a bit. This viewport is actually my editor here, like where I can make a level, like move objects around, scale them, place them. Okay, I can get artwork from our store, and which I'm going to show later. Or you can import your own artwork. This viewport is the coolest viewport. When you press play, I can actually play the game directly here in the editor before I have to export it. The project, it lists all the objects that are in my scene. It lists all my scenes, but also all the textures, the animations, the characters I have. Okay. And when we select one of those objects in the hierarchy, like my first person here, it shows on the right side all in the inspector all the properties of it. Okay. So what we're going to do, we're going to create a whole new project. Okay. Totally empty project, and we're going to start from there. Okay. And what we have here is we have like a prefab, so called a Unity package. So it makes it easy for you to create a game. So we're going to click here like on a character controller. And when I import that, it's like a package for you to make easy a first person or third person game. And we're going to add some a skybox here. Okay, that's what we're going to start with. Okay. And some of them are for free. And then when you can buy packages, they will be listed also here. So we're going to create. And we're going to save this. So what's going to happen, we're going to exit Unity and restart Unity and import those packages. Okay. And so it's decompressing everything and placing it in there. And that way you avoid that the artist will change the original package. Okay. So we have a total empty scene now. What we're going to do is first create a plane. And that's what the surface that we want to walk on. So we're going to take here my first person. I have my first person package and my third person. Select my first person and I drag it in here. And I place it on my platform. You can... I have to frame it, bring it down. When I press no play, okay, I can look around. Okay, so I see it right away up here, updated here. And I can use a WSAD key to walk around for the moment. Okay. If you don't know those keys, it's time to play games. Okay. Okay, it's pretty cool. So let's import some textures. Let's make it a little bit nicer. Okay. On my desktop, I have a folder here. I'm going to place it here on the right side. And I have the game data. And I have like textures here, like target file, PSD files. It doesn't really matter which file format I'm going to import. I'm going to select here my PSD file, Photoshop file, drag it in. And I drag it into Unity in the asset folder. That's how you import textures in Unity. Okay. So in the asset folder, we see now the sand textures are imported. And I'm going to apply it to the plane. Press play. And now I see here the sand on my plane already. Okay. Looks pretty dark, so let it be light. So we're going to create here a directional light. And we have here, for people who come from a 3D background, an art background, or photography, directional light, point lights, spotlights, and arrow light if you bake it. Okay. So I can walk around. Okay. And we have like simple objects like prefabs, like a cube, a sphere, a cylinder. If you want to start to like make simple blocks to carve out the game. Okay, but you can also import artwork. Okay, and I have here some artwork that comes from 3ds Max or Softimage. Doesn't matter. So export as an FBX. Now you're going to import the artwork you saw before. So first thing we have to do is import the textures. And I'm going to select here the platform texture. It was a Targa file. And I drag it in here in my assets folder. Okay. And then we import the FBX. And FBX is a standard file format that comes from 3D packages. So we're going to select here the platform and drag it in. So we see the object now here. When you import first the texture, then it automatically connects the texture to the 3D model. Okay. I'm going to select here the 3D model, drag and drop the 3D model in my scene now, and I don't see it. I stop my production and I blame everybody else. Okay. But what you do, I press here F to frame it, and I see it's very tiny. The reason why I show you that is because I want you to be able to do it when you come home. When you drag and drop our component and you see it, don't see it, it could be because it's so small. Okay? Because there's different scaling factors between different software packages. So the platform here, I'm going to change the scale factor to 1. And press apply. And now we have a huge platform here. Okay, bring it up. And I'm going to delete that cube. I don't need it anymore. Okay. I'm going to scale here the platform, the plane. And I'm going to take my first person, and I'm going to place it on top of the platform. Okay. Just like we saw in the game before. Press play. And I fall through it. Again, I blame everybody else, because it's not my fault. So what we have to do is we have to create a collider for that object, so we don't fall through it. Okay? How do you do that? Well, we're going to add a component to that object, physics. We're going to add a collider. We can do a box collider or a mesh collider. A mesh collider will take the exact same shape. But for performance, we're going to take a box. Yeah, we're going to take here, first person, place a little bit up. And now press play, and now I can look around here, and I'm standing on my platform already. Okay, I can jump off it, woohoo, okay. So what we want to do is we want to create those walls. So we're going to import those walls. So again, I'm going to import my texture. And I'm going to select here the wall, drag it in. And now I'm going to import the FBX, my wall here I have. Drag it in. I select my wall, and I don't see the texture. Hey, but Carl, you told me first import the texture, and then the model, and you should see the texture connected to it. Well, the reason is the artist renamed the texture before he gave it to me. So just want to show you that, be aware of that. Okay. So you can select the wall here, and scroll down, and then you can take that texture and drag it on it. So how you can reconnect it. Select the wall, and I drag it in here, my scene. Bring it up. Okay, maximize it. Okay, and I bring it a little bit back. And we're going to duplicate it. Okay. Now I want to snap it nicely to it, so that there's no opening, or it's not overlapping. How do you do that? You press the V button from frame. Click on this, and then you can snap it nicely to where you want to snap it. You're going to snap it to this corner. Can multi-select in Unity, duplicate this, okay, and there we have it. Snap it again. Okay. The cool thing is you can make prefab out of that, and I'm going to show you the power of that. So I'm going to create here a placeholder. We call it an empty game object. I'm going to select those four walls and drag it in the game object. Okay, and I can give it a name like wall. I need to learn to spell. Okay. I'm going to take that wall and I'm going to drag it out of my assets folder. And that becomes now a prefab. I'm going to show you very soon the power. So drag it in again here. Okay, I'm going to move it up. Okay, I'm going to frame it and I'm going to rotate it. Okay, we can snap this also if you want. Okay. Oh. Okay, I'm going to move it. And hold on the V button. Okay, I'm gonna move it here like really fast. Well, now my artist director comes in and says, well, the walls, all the walls should be a little bit taller. Okay, you don't want to go to each wall, scale it. You don't want to select them all. You don't want to go to all the different scenes. Just select your wall here, like you're going to select the walls and scale them. And then I say, update this to all my walls. See, and that's the power of having prefabs. And the cool thing is that prefabs, you can right-click on it and export as a package. So you can reuse it in other projects or share it to the community or even sell it on the to the community. Okay? So what I did, I went ahead and I duplicated more walls and I added some bridges. So I had a huge level and I export as a prefab and I'm going to re-import that prefab node here. So I'm going to delete that wall here and the LOD. And assets, we're going to import a custom package to my desktop. And there we have it, the game data and prefabs. And we're going to import this. So we see the importing all the textures and the FBX files. Any questions for now? So we imported here the level. Okay, the level. And I drag it here in my scene. Okay. And I'm going to press play. And now I can walk around here in my level. Okay. I'm going to add a beautiful sky to it. Okay. So in the edit render settings, skybox. And what we see is here, all our different materials. We see a sunny sky, we see the Sonoma sky, and then we see here the sky from San Francisco. So we're going to select the Sonoma sky, press play. So it basically cubes around our scene with the skybox texture on it. The lights, let's add some shadows to that. We can do hard shadows, soft shadows. Okay. And we can change the intensity of the light. Okay. And okay, so that's where we start. So now press play, and here you can see how fast actually we create our game level for our scene. Okay, let's add some more interactivity to it. Like let's add a gun to that. And the first person gun, you've seen it before, so we're going to import that now. So we're going to go to the textures again. And in the textures, what we're going to see, we see here the Bazooka normal map and the color map. And for people who come from a 3D background, a normal map will make my object look very nice, high res. So you're going to select the normal map and the color map in one shot. I'm going to import them in my scene, in my project here. And I'm going to go to the FBX, select my Bazooka FBX, and I'm going to import this. So it's asking here, hey, am I using here a normal map? Yes or no? Because it recognizes the word normal in the texture. Is this a normal map? And I say, yeah, fix no, this is a normal map. Quickly show you that. Here's the texture settings. It is asking, is it just a texture or is it used for a GUI? And was it used for a light map? No, it's used for a normal map. And we have our Bazooka here. You see nicely the result. Okay. Again, I'm going to make my Bazooka a little bit bigger. Take my Bazooka, and I'm going to make it a child of the camera of my first person. See, and there we have it. So what we see is here the local axes are a little bit very strange, and I especially did that to show you that you can nicely switch between local and global if you want on your objects. Okay. And okay, what's going on? Okay, there we have no global, and we're going to bring it down. Please let it wrap. I'm going to bring it a bit more forward. Okay. There I have my weapon. And here you can nicely put your aspect ratios of your screen. Okay. And press play. And what we see is now that the Bazooka is following our camera because it's attached to it. So no matter where I look, it's always ready to shoot. Okay. We don't see animations on it. Let's deal with that. In our software package, we made an animation on it. We made a shoot animation, an idle animation on it. And when I go to my Bazooka here, my rig, I'm going to put that to legacy. We have no different settings here, and later on it will become more clear what is what I mean with generic and humanoid. You're going to put it to legacy, apply. And we have here the animation, the total length from 01 to 80. And what we're going to do is we made an animation in Maya from frame 1 to frame 60, who's an idle animation. Okay, and we're going to call it idle. Okay, and we have another animation, and we're going to call it shoot. Okay, this one should be idle. And we have the shoot animation here. And the shoot animation goes from frame 60 to frame 75. Okay. The idle animation, because it's like I'm breathing or I'm running, I want to loop that automatically. So what we have here in the wrap mode, click, loop that animation. So once it's playing, loop it. My shoot animation, I'm going to put it to once, because I don't want to click and then stand there like shaking. I just want to shoot it one time. I'm going to press apply. Then I go to my bazooka. What we see is here now the animations attached to it. So we see an idle animation. And we have two animations. We have an idle and a shoot. We will be playing automatically the idle animation. So when I press play, by default, I will be playing now the idle animation. And it automatically will loop. So I can walk nicely around here, okay. And I have the impression of running. Okay. Okay. Let's create a little object that we're going to shoot. We're going to create here a simple object. I can create a sphere. Okay. And we're going to move it forward, so we can nicely see it in our scene here. I'm going to go to top viewport. I'm going to place my first person a little bit more interesting. Place him here and the sphere. I'm going to place it here. Okay. And we're going to scale the sphere a little bit more. Okay, let's create a material for it. So create material. And we can change the color maybe to red more or more yellow color too. Okay, we're going to apply the yellow material to the sphere, and there it is. So we have the sphere now, and we see the material applied to it. Okay. Let's add some physics to it, so later on when I shoot it, it falls down. So we're going to create, add a component, physics, a rigid body. Okay, when I press play, what we see is now that the sphere will nicely fall down. So when later on when I shoot it, it will fall down because of the physics. Okay. What we want is also that when we shoot it, the sphere flies, and then after a few seconds it disappears. We don't need to see it anymore. Okay. We're going to do that through scripting. So we're going to create. I can use Java scripting or C# here. Okay. It doesn't really matter. Okay. And what we have function start, function update. I'm going to destroy. So function start, for who from you is a programmer here? Okay. Who's more an artist? Okay. So with function start, it means on the first frame. Okay, when the script becomes in the scene, the first frame, I read this function. Function update is every frame. Okay. So then destroy. What I'm going to destroy? An object, a game object. An object in my game. And let's say after 5 seconds. And we're going to save this. And I take the script and apply it to the sphere. So what we see is nicely component-based. We see the rigid body attached to it. We see the script attached to it. We see the material attached to it. So when I press no play, sphere falls. And if you can count until 5, I hope everybody, the sphere will be gone. It also takes it out of the hierarchy. So it takes it out of the memory. So the sphere here, let's play, and we see it gone. But the problem here in this case is that the artist and the programmers cannot really work together. If the artist wants to change it, the designer wants to change it to 7 seconds, he has to rely on the programmer. So that doesn't work good. If the artist calls at 5 o'clock in the morning to the programmer, hey, how do you change that? they're not all too happy. Okay. So Unity says, let's make sure that the artist and the programmer can work together. So what I can do is, let's create a slider here so that the artist can really define and fine-tune. So we're going to edit the script here. Okay. And the number 5, I'm going to replace it by, like, say, BLT, the bullet lifetime. Okay. And we're going to create a variable. Bullet lifetime is a float. Let's say from 5 seconds. Okay. Save this. So the moment you type in floats, it becomes a slider. If you type in a game object, a drop-down menu of all the objects you have in your scene. Okay. So what we see is here now a slider. So we nicely can adjust this. And if you want to say 8 seconds, my sphere will now stay there for 8 seconds. Okay, so let's create now the interactivity. When I click my mouse, I will instantiate that sphere, put it in front of my gun, and shoot it forwards. So first what I'm going to do is a locator, make a visible location where I'm going to instantiate that sphere in front of my weapon. It's going to go to my bazooka, going to create an empty game object, and we're going to look here from the right viewport, and I'm going to place it here in front of my weapon. Okay, top viewport. And I'm going to make it a child of my bazooka. So I'm going to call this the spawning point here. Spawning point. Okay. This is the bazooka selected here. And I make that spawning point a child of that. Okay. So when I press play, you see it always following. Okay. Let's put it to local mode. Press play so you can see that the Z-axis is always looking forward. That's the direction we're going to shoot our sphere in. The problem is, when I don't have it selected, it's pretty hard to see in my scene. Okay. What can I do for that? Select it and create a button for it. Okay. So the cool thing is, even when you don't have nothing selected, you click on the button and you have it directly selected in the hierarchy. You don't have to look in the hierarchy to find it. Okay. So because we use those exposed parameters here, like in the destroy script, right, when we have a slider, we can easily also start to reuse scripts from other projects, right, and adjust the values from there. So we're going to import here a script. I have a script here, shoot. Okay. Take the shoot script, I'm going to bring it in, drag it in. And first, I'm going to show it from an artist's viewpoint, and then show it from a programmer's viewpoint. So the artist gets the script, shoot, and he asks me, hey, how do I work with that? Well, apply to the spawning point, and you will see from there. So I take the shoot script, and I drag it to the spawning point. Okay. And right away, we can see here the exposed parameters. What's your bullet prefab? Ah, okay, that's sphere. Okay. What's your shoot force? A slider. An audio clip. Oh, I need an audio clip. So I'm going to import an audio clip here. So I'm going to go to my audio files, like sound effects. And I have here a rifle sound. Okay. So just drag and drop the audio file directly here in the assets. Okay. So we have it here. We can look at it, listen to it. Okay. And we're going to take that audio file and drag it on my and selecting my spawning point. Hey. Oh. Hopefully. Okay. And okay, we're going to quickly have to make the scene here. Okay, I'm going to go to my game level. My level, drag it in here. I'm going to go to my assets, standard assets, my character controller, my first person, place it in here. I'm going to create my light. Okay, and my first person has the weapon. Take here the bazooka, drag it on my camera, okay, and bring it down to the front, and I save my scene now. So I'm going to just create here my script to it, my empty game object. Okay, placed in front. And I'm going to make it a child of my bazooka. Okay, and add the script to it. Shoot. Okay. And there we're back. Okay. And okay, my bullet prefab. I'm going to create here my bullet here, sphere. And move it forward. I'm going to scale it. Okay. And then we're going to add the script to it that we created for it. Okay, and we're going to be shooting that bullet here soon. Hit the sphere. I'm going to add some physics to it too. Okay. Add component physics. Which is body and sphere. And I'm going to just start from here now. Press play. And we're going to make sure that our first person is on standing on top. And save this. Press play. Okay. So now we have our scene here where we can shoot the sphere. Okay. There's one problem. It's when I press play here. And we're actually instantiating that sphere here. So after 8 seconds, that sphere is gone. Now I cannot duplicate that sphere anymore. Okay. So the problem is that this sphere has a script of destroying it. So when you destroy that sphere, you cannot instantiate it anymore. So what we're going to do, we're going to take that sphere, and we're going to take it out of the game like a prefab. We can remove that one in the scene here. Okay. So the moment it's out of the scene, the script is not running anymore on it. So I will be duplicating. I'm going to go here to my main camera, bazooka. I need the button for it. We will be duplicating the sphere, the bullet, from out of the project. So the script is not running on it. When you duplicate it, it becomes in the scene, and then the script is right active on it. So now I can shoot for all my life the sphere around in the scene here. Okay. And so we have done this. So the next step is to create an enemy that we'll be shooting. Okay, let's import here in our scene what we have here. It's going to go back here to my script, to my textures. Or here I have a robot here. So we're going to import the FBX and the textures. So we're going to select here the textures and select the FBX and then one shot. Okay, so when you have the FBX and the textures selected, and when you import that in one shot, it will automatically detect the order. So it's going to first import the textures and then the FBX. Okay, so we have the robot here now in our scene. Okay, so we're going to import that robot in my scene. Okay, and I'm going to select the robot and I drag it in here. Press play. Again, we can scale up that robot a little bit. I'm going to go here to the robot in the project itself. And we go to the model, put to 7, and apply. I'm going to take the robot, and I'm going to go here to top viewport. My first person, I'm going to move it backwards. And my robot here, I'm going to face my first person, and rotate it. So when I press play here, and I go to that robot, hey you, hasta la vista, I go through it. Okay, I want to collide with him. Okay, well, it's really simple. We're going to select that robot here, and we're going to add a component, physics, and we can this time use a capsule controller. I'm going to bring it over up and scale this. Okay. So now when I press play and I go to the robot here, I hit him already. See? Okay. What we can do is now create a script. The moment that robot is hit, we destroy that robot. So I'm going to go here to my scripts again. Okay. And I go here. We're going to go to scripts. And we have a script bullet hits. I'll drag it in my scene here. Okay. You have the bullet hit. And this time it's a function collision enter. So the moment there's a collision, okay, destroy the game object, destroy the robot, destroy the object that collides with it. And later on we're going to talk about the score and instantiate an explosion. So we're going to take that script and I'm going to drag it here on my robot. Press play. And I go to my robot here. Hey you. And the robot is gone. Okay. Next thing we have to do is create some particles for it. Okay, so when we hit it. Okay. So how we can create particles? I'm going to save my scene here. I'm going to create here. Yes?
Is that collision also going to happen if you run into the robot? Will it destroy you and them? Or is it actually...
So it has to happen when actually... the repression is, if I would walk into the robot, like in this case, okay, will the robot disappear too? Or is it a collision? Because my first person, okay, we actually use a character controller, okay, and when you want to have a collision with a character controller, it has to be on collision controller collider. So, and this time with this robot, I'm just looking for a general object with a collider on it, not a character controller. Okay, so we're going to create now a particle system. Okay, and we can move this. Okay, and the particle system is a lot of things I can talk about there. Okay, so you want to have an explosion, and I'm just going to give you a little bit overview what the possibilities here are all with particles. So right now we have the particles coming out here. Okay, and first of all, I want to change the colors of my particles and the duration. So at the moment, it's 5 seconds, but I loop it. Okay. The particles should not live so long, maybe 2 seconds. Okay. Move a bit backwards. I want a little bit more particles in there. And we can add a little bit more particles. Okay. And the main thing we want to start to change is the colors of the particles. So look here. I can go to the color over lifetime. Click that. And my particles, when they start, hey, they should be maybe more red. Okay, a little bit later on, they should be more yellow, my particles. Okay, and I see yellow here. Okay, we do that. Okay, and then we can say here the particles should be dark. Okay, so there we start to see more like a flame coming out. Okay, definitely what we should do is derate a bit more. Okay. Okay, nice, the flame's coming out, okay. And then I can say about to create a little bit more different, okay, the shape first of all, we have the radius, okay, like just here from the, coming out that character, and then you can do the angle changing there, okay. But what you want to do is really more make it irregular, so that's not like the same ending, okay, the same speed, all the particles, so look here. The particles have a certain speed of 5, if I put faster or slower, okay? But what I want to do is a little bit differences, random between two curves. Okay? Some particles will maybe go 1 unit and some particles will come 2. So you see, start to see it's all different here, okay? And then we make sure that there's no problems here. Like we can then change the render and then we can say first the search mode, sort mode, like the oldest particles are always rendered first, okay, so we don't have any problems here in the rendering. Okay, and then we can say the duration of our particles also should be a little bit different. So if I go here to the duration, life. So at the moment it's 2. Let's change that also random between values. Maybe some particles live 1 and some particles live 2. See, we start to see it's different. Okay, we don't want the particles to disappear. We want to nicely start to fade them off. So we can go here to, right, we can the call over lifetime again. On the end here, what we're going to do is the alpha, we're going to fade them out. So nicely, they're going to start to fade here. Okay, maybe a little bit less particles. Okay. 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 So in game, stop. If I press play, we see nicely the particles coming out. See? So we could use that particle, and we can keep on working on it. We can add a little bit like effects to it of pieces falling out. Okay, like there's a lot you can do in that, but to give me a full overview of particles takes me like a good 2 hours. What I'm going to do, I'm going to go to our store and buy from there directly some nice particles effects that have been finished. So I'm going to go to our asset store. Okay. And okay, we were just on it. Okay, it's connecting to the internet. Okay, the asset store is a store where, as an artist or programmer, you can upload art content in it. You can upload script editor extensions and sell them on our store. And it works like a 70-30 model. There's about 5,000 packages in our app store. Our top 10, our top 15 are easily making $20,000 a month. Right? One of the extensions is written by one guy, NGUI, to have better performance for your GUI, and he made last year $500,000 just on selling that assets package. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to look here for some particles. Okay. And I type in Shuriken, and I see like a whole bunch of extensions even, or libraries of particles. So here for type $35, I can actually buy 40 particles. Actually, it's 60, I know it by heart. So what can I do? I can import that directly into my game. So that's provided by a community member. You download that art content directly in your game. This extension is written for like making it easy to make 2D animations, making visual connecting, node connecting for shaders. There's also a high huge library for all different character animations. So I import that now here. And let's look at that package I just imported here. Okay. And it's a library of all different particle systems. So if you have wind, pretty cool, eh? So instead of creating that for $35, you buy it, you import it in game, and you're ready with it. So there's some very cool ones. Okay. Flames. Okay. Like that's what I like. Okay. All the arms, and get some flames on it, and other particles here. So you see, you can. There's a whole library of all different particles, and that you can use for $35. Pretty cool. Okay, I'm gonna go back to my game. Yeah, and we're going to go to that robot, and so I'm going to take one of those particles from that effect, like say the ritual effect. We're going to take the pentagram ritual, and I'm going to drag and drop in it. Let's play, and then we can, I need to learn to shoot. Okay, I should make them go faster. Okay. And then we say the particle system. And when I hit, the particle system comes out of it. Okay, and get my first person here. Okay, and also we're going to activate here the bazooka on it, so we see the animation playing. So idle here, when I shoot, I have the, wow, good shot. I can shoot it directly. Okay. Also, we can actually put here like in a crosshair on it. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go here to one of my textures. Okay. And we're going to go to textures and have an aim texture here and drag and drop it in my scene. Okay. And aim here. It's actually in a crosshair with an alpha channel in it. So we're going to convert that texture has a GUI. Wait a second. I had to sneeze almost. So I'm gonna GUI texture, and there we have it. You can see it on the screen here now. We can change the color of it. So we're gonna make it also more yellow color to it, so it matches with my environment. And the alpha channel, we can bring it a lot less. So nicely, we have here our crosshair now in our game. And then we can start to play. Okay. We can change the position of the crosshair a little bit more to the right and rotate the weapon, but it's not necessary for this example. Okay. So the next step is that we want that robot actually comes to attack me. Okay. So what we're going to do for that is create a nav mesh. Okay. So define where our robot can all walk. Okay. And I'm going to select the objects that I want my robot can walk on or jump on. Okay, or jump down to, and I select one of the objects, and I'm going to put it to static for the navigation. Okay, what I've done, I selected all the platforms and the bridges in my scene, and I put them to navigation static. Then I go to Windows, and here to the navigation. And we're going to bake, so it's going to calculate now where our robot can all walk. So click bake, and what we see is here the blue area, and that's where our robot will be able to walk. Yeah. And then you have like parameters for more accuracy in the baking. I'm going to bake this. Okay, and nicely we have now a little bit less. Okay. And I could see more. Sorry, I did it wrong. Bake. Hey. The inaccuracy. Okay, yeah. So we got it back here almost. Okay. What we want to do is make sure that the robot belongs to that nav mesh. So I'm going to select here my robot and I'm going to add a component, a navigation agent. So it's an agent from a nav mesh. Okay, it belongs to it. So now we can use strong APIs to make sure that as a robot will like try to find me. Okay, I'm gonna import a script for that. And I have here a script. The game data scripts. And we're gonna take here robot controller. I'm gonna drag in that in my scene. I'm gonna look at that script, I'm gonna explain it. Okay, yeah. I'm going to open that script. Okay. So first it's here trying to find a, like, I'm going to define who I'm looking at, who's my target and a game object. So I'm going to put my target as a first person. Here it's looking for if there's a pad already defined or not. If not, set a destination, and that's one of our APIs, to the nav target transform position, so that the position of my target that I declare outside was a game object, so my first person I'm going to drag and drop in there. If my navigation distance, it's at the moment 1, I'm going to change it to 2. If the remaining distance between my target and my nav mesh agent is more than 2, then we're going to come later to this, what happens here, but basically we want my character then to walk towards my first person. If not, if I'm closer than 2 units, right, of my remaining distance between the target is closer than 2, then I put the destination to the transform position to its own position, so the character will stand still. Okay. So I'm going to take that script and I drag it on my robot. Okay, so it has now attached. And who's the target? Well, my first person. So press play. And what we're going to see now is that this robot comes after me. No matter where I run, did I shoot him? Yeah, okay. So if I run away here, okay, he will be always coming after me. Hasta la vista. So we can add multiple robots to that. Okay, and they will also nicely avoid each other. Okay, so I'm going to show you here. I'm going to take here some of those robots, place a few more. Okay, in my scene. Press play. And nicely, see, they start all to come after me. Run here a little bit. And they see nicely. And we'll shoot them. They're there. Okay. So you see, it's easy to create an F mesh target and use strong APIs to make sure that the objects come after you. And on our website, there's more examples of avoiding each other with doors, things like that. Okay. The next step I want to do is that those characters play the correct animations. Okay. And for that, I'm going to use a technique, something built in Unity called Mechanim. And later on, I'm going to take it really more in depth with that. Okay. So we have those characters, but I don't have any animations on it. And I didn't make animations for it. Okay. What can I do? I can get animations who are made on another character, or literally go to our store here, like the asset store. Okay. And I can type in here, go to the animation tab. Okay. And then I can look there for like running, walking, jumping. And we have already provided 150 free motion capture files, and also like several in this package, all for free that you can use. Totally game friendly. A game friendly made. So what I'm doing, I'm going to go here to my desktop, okay, and I'm going to go to my animations, and I have here a whole library of different animations. And I import that. It's a huge library, okay, so later on we will be using more of them. So it's importing here all the FBX files for that. So we see like turning left, turning right, jumping. But the FBX files will be stored differently in Unity, and they will be basically a fraction of what they are in an FBX file format. So the cool thing is, what I will be doing, I will be using animation files from other characters of different proportions, different sizes, on this character. Okay. So they almost imported here. Maybe I have even a wave animation that maybe later on we can do. Okay. There they are. So I don't need all the robots anymore. I'll just remove them for the time being. So I'm going to select my robot. Okay. Bring it up a little bit. Save my scene. And the animations I imported here, let's look at that. So look, I have here like an idle animation. We see it on a totally different character, totally different proportion, different structure actually too. I'm going to click on the animation tab. And when I press play, I see the idle animation on this character. I want to take that animation and apply it to this guy. Okay. Well, what I'm going to do for that is I define my character, like what is the head, what's the hand, what's the spine. If I know what it is, then I can take animations from another character and apply it to this character. So I'm going to go to my assets here, to my robot. Okay. Go to my rig, and I'm going to put it to humanoid. I'm going to apply it. Okay. So what happens actually in the background, I'm going to show you here. It places my character in a T-pose, and it tries to find, hey, what's the hip, what's the spine, what's the shoulder. It tries to find it automatically for you. I read all the information about how they did it, but it was too complex for me to understand it. They look at the naming convention, but then they look at a whole different structures also. So press done. Now I know, understand exactly what's the head, what's the arm, so I can take the animations from another character. So we see here the robot has now a new component attached to it called animator. We see the controller here. Okay. And we're going to create something to control the animation. We're going to do it visually. So we're going to create an animation controller. Double click on that. It's empty. Okay. I'm going to take the animation idle I have here. Okay. Drag and drop that in here. So this is my idle animation. Go back to my scene, to my robot. And I'm going to take here, click my animation controller. So to control my animations, we're going to apply this to this robot now. Remember that animation is coming from a totally different character. When I press no play, what we see is here, we see the idle animation. Let's go to the robot here for a second. Okay. And I'm going to turn off the nav mesh for the moment. Okay. Press play. See, and now we see nicely that idle animation, that same animation, applied to this robot. Okay. We want to be able that our robot also walks. So we're going to go to idle here in our animation viewport. back to animations. And we have here a run animation. Let's use running. So let's look at run animations. Let's play. And I have here a run animation. Okay. Who from you has ever worked with motion capture? Okay. So the cool thing is that actually when you look at this character, this is actually a raw mocap file. But it looks perfectly game friendly. My character is running in the correct direction, no up and downs, and nicely cyclable. Okay. Let me show you the raw mocap file. Okay. Press play. What we see is here, you see the animation. You see it's drifting over time because it's not running in a perfect line. And also, you see at the begin frame and the end frame of the character not the same. So that's why we get that strange behavior. Okay. We want to make from that animation a game-friendly animation. Well, let's do that. Okay. First, look, what we see is here, that's the beginning frame of the animation. And we want to find something similar. And we see that curve here, red, impossible, green, yellow, not good. And green has something similar, but it doesn't have to be the same. Okay. So we still say, hey, that little, it's not perfect. So what we're going to do, create a loop pose, and automatically for you creates a beginning pose and an end pose who's the same, and it nicely loops the animation. Okay. We want to be able to walk nicely straight. So look here, what we can do, we're going to lock the rotation, the position, and the position up and down. Oh, not that, not that. And now I have nicely my character running forward, exactly game friendly. Okay. So I'm going to take that animation. I'm going to press here apply. Okay. And apply. I'm going to take that run animation now and drag it in here. Okay. And we can go from idle to run, and from run to idle. Okay. Later on, we're going to see that more in depth here, what we all do here. And okay, so let's look back at our robot here. And we activate the NavMesh and the robot controller script. Okay. In the robot controller script, I said the moment that the remaining distance is more than 2, we're going to do something here strange here. So we set the position, of course, to the target, so we go to it. But I'm going to change. I'm going to go to the avatar viewport and set the value of speed to 1. Okay. Well, the avatar viewport is actually my animated viewport. And I'm going to set the value of speed to 2. Okay. I'm going to create no floating value speed. Okay. What I'm going to do, when will I go from idle to run? Well, actually, when the speed is higher than 0.1. Okay. Well, the moment my robot starts to go after me, when the distance is more than 2, then it will change the value of 2 from speed up more than 0.1, and that's why I'm going to start to run. And from run, I'm going to do the opposite, from run to when the speed is less than 0.1. Okay. So let's look in the script here. Okay, in my robot here, edit script. See, the moment that the remaining distance is more than 2, set the value of speed to 1. So the moment it's more than 0.1, it will start to run my character. Okay, so press play. And you see the character run, and we can shoot him. Okay. So that's how you easily can control. Hey, you can go easy to our library, grab animations, drag and drop on a character without you have to create it all from scratch. Okay, this is pretty cool. We have this game now in first person, but we want to optimize it. Because the artist will put in all the polygons in there, all the light effects in there, but you want to be able to shoot it. It runs really nicely on mobile devices. So there's a few things we can do for that. First of all, we can use occlusion culling. Okay. Occlusion culling is the fact that I will only calculate what I actually see. So here's my first person, and it's my camera here. Okay. But if I look to the right here, okay, by default, Unity is using frustum culling, so I calculate everything that's in the camera viewport. I will be also calculating this area that I actually don't see, but it's in my camera viewport. What I want to only calculate and only see I only calculate what I see. So what we're going to do for that is go to here to a tab called Windows Occlusion Culling. I'm going to show you what's actually happened with that. I kind of do here my stats here, and I press play. Okay, we have about 136 draw calls here, so we're going to try to bring that down. Okay, so Windows Occlusion Culling. Okay, and we have a total mesh. Actually, I can create my own mesh for that. Okay, and I'm going to put the cell size a bit bigger. Okay, if you're not familiar with occlusion culling, okay, what will happen is I'm going to click here bake. And it will place my camera in each cell and calculate what can I see in that cell and not, what is hidden for me. Okay, so it calculates pretty fast. Press play. So now when I look around, now you can, it only calculates what it actually sees. Okay. Oh, I'm just falling from the bridge now. But let's look at the draw calls here. Press play. Okay, and so now you see here we have, instead of 120 draw calls, we have 56 draw calls. Okay, so we reduced the draw calls with only the half. Okay. Okay, in the build settings, at the moment we stand alone here. I'm just going to check here my quality settings. Okay. Okay, and we're going to go here to my direction light. Okay. At the moment we have real-time light going on here, but we can do light probes when we do bake. So we're gonna go, first of all, we can bake light information in our scene by going Windows light mapping, and I dock the window in here. Okay, and we can go to lights bake. And I'm going to put it to low quality, so we're going to bake everything with indirect light and direct shadows. We can all bake it, okay? And this is the resolution we're going to use. 50 is really high, so I can show you that the resolution here, light map resolution. You can zoom in here, okay? See, and that's the quality of we're going to bake. So we're going to put it to 5, to a lot less quality, so we can bake much faster, okay? You can also bake directly ambient occlusion in there. So I'm going to click here, bake scene. Okay, I'm going to bake everything now. Okay. So it's baking here. While it's baking, you can actually work in Unity, work on your scripts. And the only thing you should not do is change the scene, because then it doesn't know what's going on here. Okay. Okay, and the baking is almost done. Takes a bit of time. Baking, and then it's importing the textures, and it imports it as an EXR, so you can actually open it in Photoshop and change the values of the intensity of my scene. Okay, but another thing that we can do is actually for optimization is level of detail. So if you go further away from an object, okay, like this platform, we can actually swap it with lower res models. Okay. So what we're going to do for that, I'm going to go to here to my game data, and I actually have lower res models here. It's going to go to the FBX file, okay. And I have here, see, an LOD 0, 1, and 2. I'm going to take here an LOD 2 in my scene, okay, and LOD 2 here. So we have like a really low res model here. Okay, I'm gonna drag it in my scene here. I'm gonna place it here. Okay, I'm gonna place it here. Just gonna show you. Okay, and I'm gonna apply the texture to it too. Okay, and then I'm gonna take here the high res model of it and place it in here. Okay. Okay, and I place it nicely, same position. Okay. So we have a model who's high res and a model who's low res. Okay. What we want to do is when we go further away, we want to swap the high res model with the low res model. Okay. We're going to create a placeholder for that. And we're going to add and rendering a level of detail group to it. Okay. The LOD0 means, what's your high-res model? I'm going to say, that's my high-res model. The LOD0 is my high-res model. What's your LOD1? I'm going to use a 2. I'm not going to do them all here. Okay. So look now. When I'm close by, I have the high-res. When I go further away, I'm going to swap here. See? It swaps with the low-res model. When I go far away, I go to colored. And you can always easily define when we do the swapping. You can define nicely here when we're going to swap between the different LODs. The cool thing is, you're actually swapping a whole new model, so you can change also the materials. Instead of using expensive material, when you go further away, it's a low-res material. But even for explosions, if you have explosions like a nice particle system, you can swap it with a texture atlas when the particles come farther away. Just going to drink a little bit of water here. Okay, cool. Well, save my scene. So here you start to see like all tools we have for optimization. There's also script optimization. And of course, we have a profiler. When you play your game here, the profiling is starting. Okay, and then you can stop. Then you can scroll in there, and we look at the CPU, your GPU, your rendering, your memory. Okay. Cool thing is in the memory here, we can actually take a snapshot, and then you can go to the assets, and look here at the textures, and can right see how much it takes in the memory, and when you have it selected, it also selects it in your project, so you can see where it actually is located. And it's really cool, and because of that, you can really look at your bottlenecks and start to tweak your game. Okay, this is really cool, what we've done here now. But what we want to do is be able to put it for mobile also. So that I have on my Windows phone that I can have my touch input. How do I do that? Well, what we're going to create, you could start to script everything, but that's a lot of work. Unity wants to make it easy for you. So we have here a bundle, the asset, standard assets for mobile. So I'm going to import that. And those are all examples of a side scroller, top-down viewport, first person. Okay, you want to look here. So we're going to go here to standard assets for mobile, control setups. Look here, we have a relative for third person, first person, side scroller, tab control. And here's my first person setup. Look, and here I recognize the same guy I have, but I have here my touch input zones for looking around and walking. It's all set up for you. Those zones here are basically just simple textures, okay? And you can change that with your own texture. Okay, that's really cool, but every scene was made also as a prefab. So I'm going to go back to my scene here. Okay, I'm going to go to my first person here. And I'm going to go now here to my prefab for mobile. For my Surface and my Windows Phone 8. So I'm going to take here my first person. And I drag it in my scene. Okay, I'm going to rename it a bit here. I'm going to call this one Surface Man. Okay, and this I'm going to... And my control, my joysticks or something, first person joysticks. Okay, my character is not placed where my first person is for mouse and keyboard. So I'm gonna do that. So I'm gonna make it a child. Okay, and what we're gonna do is reset the position. Go to there. Place it down, and then I can actually take the weapon of my first person. I'm going to duplicate that now, okay. And take that and place it on my camera of my character for my Surface. Okay, so we have this now. And then I can deactivate here my first person for mouse and keyboard. Okay, press play. And what we see is here, I press play, and then we have this environment here, no. Okay. But what we want to do, and we have here the touch inputs and everything, but based on our build settings, okay, if I put here for PC x80 or for the Windows Phone 8, okay, or the Windows apps, the Windows Store app, based on that, I want to define what my settings should be. Okay, what should I automatically detect my joysticks or my mouse and keyboard input? Okay, so I'm going to activate them all. And I'm going to import here a little script. Go to my desktop for that. I have a script multiplayer. Okay, and I drag and drop that in my scene. Okay, let's look at that script. Okay. Multi-platform here. So, function awake, when the game starts, check if it's one of the devices here. So if you made a game before that was multi-platform for other touch inputs, okay, and for the web, the only thing you have to add here is the Unity Metro, your Windows Unity Windows 8, automatic detection then for you. Okay, so and then I can set that active and those deactivate. Okay, so I take that script, I'm gonna put it in my scene, so I'm gonna create an empty object. And I can call it multi-platform, so detect which platform I'm using. And I drag and drop that script in my scene. Okay, where did I put my script here? Drag it in here. Okay. So what's my mobile character? It's this one. What's my mouse and keyboard character? This one. What's my joysticks? It's this. So when I press no play, okay, I'm set here to Windows 8, and then automatically it knows it that it's mouse and keyboard. Okay, if I would change my settings to Windows 8 phone, okay, then it automatically will, when we press play, it will automatically put the touch inputs there. Okay, it's platform. Okay, so this is for touch input now. I cannot move left and right or move forward because I need to touch input. Okay. So what we did is here, we created a game. That is, we created a level, we created interactivity for first person. But now let's look more a little bit at third person, how easy it is to create third person games. Okay. So I'm going to go here to my desktop here. Okay. And we're going to go to Windows 8. I have my character here. I'm going to drag and drop my character that I showed you earlier on there, my high-res character. I'm going to import that into Unity. Okay. So I'm going to import several textures. And what we're going to do, we're going to make sure that our character can nicely walk forward, left, and right, and jump and shoot. I'm going to import it here. It's quite a bit of data on this character. Any questions so far? Okay. And there's my character. Open it. I have it here, my character. I'm going to apply the texture to it. Place in my scene. Okay. I'm going to select here my character. Okay. And I'm going to add a material to it. Okay. And we have here several textures. So I'm going to place it here. So we have our character already imported here. Okay, remember it's modeled after me. Save the scene. And again, we're going to start really simple. Okay, we're going to create our animation controller for our robot. Okay. Again, we're going to start with the idle animation. So we're going to go to I'm going to import some other animations I have here. So this is really cool. It's from the store I got. Okay. And I have here, okay, drag and drop a whole bunch of animations in it. Okay, they're imported here. We have here an idle animation. I drag it in. Okay. So what we see is here we see it on a character here. Okay. The animation. Okay. But you can actually show it nicely on your character now. Like if I would go here. So the first thing we have to do is also, I forgot now that my character, we have to characterize it. We have to put in a T-pose. Say it's a character. So we're going to go to the rig here and say this is a humanoid rig. So the moment it says humanoid rig, it will look actually at feet planting. So when I walk, it will make sure that there's no feet sliding going on. So we have the idle animation here. Okay. When I go to animations here, here, idle. And I can take now my character actually and drag it in there, press play, and I see that animation on my character, that idle animation. It's not much moving my character here yet, okay? So when I go here to my scene now, okay, to and take here, deactivate my first person, all my first person characters, okay? And my main camera, and I place it now behind my character here, okay? And my camera. Okay, we're going to look from the side viewport. Bring it up. Top viewport. Okay. And we're going to place it here to my character, a little bit to the right. So we can see our character. We can see our. You never put your first person, third person camera right behind the character because then you obstruct your view. So you're gonna put it more to the right and make a child of my main camera now. Okay. So I'm gonna go back to my. So we see the animator here, and I'm gonna attach the animator I was just creating here for our robot. Okay. Press play. I don't need my scripts running here for the multiplayer. Okay. My multiplayer here. I don't need to run this. Let's play. What we see is here that character is having the idle animations on it. Okay. And my robot is still running to the other character, so we're gonna deactivate this now here. Okay, so press play. And we have an animation, but what we see is with that animation, it's not looking really naturally. We want that animation, and the arms are too close in my character. I'm going to show you here, like, my main character here. Okay. So when I press play here, look here, there's a character. The arms are too close to it. Okay. But I don't want to recreate a new animation or open that animation in another software and do changes to it. I can do it directly here in Unity. Okay. So I can go to my character here. Okay. We're going to go to the rig. We're going to configure our rig. We're going to go to the muscle space. And that's about how our character, like the range of motions that my character has. Okay? So, like here, my right arm and my left arm. Okay? So, this is my arm up and down. See? What we see is here, it goes fully in the body. I don't want that. So, I'm going to bring that a little bit more to here. And when I go up, maybe a lot less. Okay? Same with my right arm. So I'm going to look here, I'm going to bring that, okay, bring it to here, okay, and bring this down, okay, so now this is the range of motion, okay, that's way too much, of my arm, see, okay, so I'm going to press done, okay, and, I don't know if I press apply actually. Press play. Okay, so you see now nicely that my arm, I'm going to show, take here my character big. Okay, that my arm is actually nicely out of my character. It's not in my character anymore. Okay? I'm going to go back to my character here now. Okay, cool. And to my animator. So we have my idle animation. Okay. What we want to do, we want to have the animation of walking forward, left, right, front, back, left, and right. Okay. So we're going to go to my animations here. Okay. So I'm going to create here a blend tree for that. So I want to be able to blend between different animations. So I'm going to select my blend tree. Okay. I'm going to add four animations to that. Okay. We have an animation. So we have left strafing. We have right strafing. Okay. We have running. And we have walking backwards. Okay. So we have those four animations that I want to be able to blend in it. Okay. Now what we see is here is a linear blend. Okay. So based on one value, you can switch between all those different animations. But actually, I'm going to use two inputs. The input running forward and backwards. Eh? And then the value from left and right. So I have two inputs that I want to blend in there. So what I do for that, I'm going to my blend tree should be a 2D blend tree. A 2D blend tree type. Okay. So you're going to select that. And okay, the position of the left, 1. Okay, left should be minus 1. Okay, like this is my, when I have nothing pressed forward, left or right. Okay. And my right should be 1. Okay. And this should be then walking, running 1. And this was minus 1. Okay. So you see, that's the value neutral, forward, left, and right. I will blend those two different animations. Okay. So we nicely can see at the blend tree here. Look. Press play. Okay. But the problem, I have one slider, so I want two sliders for that. Okay. So we're going to add a slider here, a float. Okay. And we're going to do it. Floater left to right, plus another float for the value of front, forward, and back. Okay, so we're gonna do left, right here, and front and back. Okay, let's play. Okay, and also we have to be able to go from idle to running, just like we did before. So we're gonna make a transition for that. Okay, and we're going to add a value, a float here, a speed for that again, just like we did with our other character. Okay, this, if the speed is greater than 0.1, okay, and when the speed is less than 0.1, okay. And can we preview it here? Yeah. So you see, I'm standing still. I'm going to run left. You're going to run right. And you see the value here updating. Okay. And then here forward and backwards. Okay. Nicely, you have the pure blending between all those different values. Okay. So we're going to go back to our scene here. Select our robot here. Our main character here. And we're going to add a script for that. Okay, and I'm going to import a script here for that. Take that script. I'm going to import it here. Okay, or I have it here, scripts. Okay, I'm going to look at the script. So I can take that script, I'm going to apply it to my main character. Okay, and I'm going to explain a little bit the script here. Okay. So the value of V for my input vertical, so if I do left or right, it goes from minus 1 to plus 1, and I put that in the value of the animator float of front and backwards, and I typed in forward and backwards in my forward and back. And then the H for H is the horizontal, left and right, and the vertical is the V. So that value, I'm going to just put it directly in the float of my animator viewport. Okay. And again, the speed, just to see if I'm positive or negative, if I'm running forward and I'm going to the running state. Save that. Press play. Okay. And now I can run forward. And then we can do backwards. Okay. And that's how you start with your game, even the third person. And then you can really continue on that by adding jumps, rolls, falls, and then layered animations also on that. Okay. I see we're already on an hour and a half busy here. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to open the project and then explain from there a little bit more. So we have here our main character here, and it disappeared. Oh no, activated here. Okay, and those we don't need. Okay, back to the animated viewport of my robot here. Okay. So my run and my idle head here, my different positions here, okay. And then we have added here the dive animation. Okay? Character jumping here. I actually did that jump for Unity. Okay. And we apply that to our character and just drag it in. And then again, a transition we made here, and we can see from jumping. And we use the Boolean operator for that, like when I press the jump button. Okay, and now we have a shoot animation added to our character. What we did for that is create a new layer, and that's our shoot animation here we had. We want to go from any state, from when we're standing still or running, we want to go to the shoot animation. Okay, so I can then say here, if I press the shoot button, I will play from any given time the shoot animation. Okay, but I didn't want to affect the lower body. For that, I just wanted to do the upper body, and for that, I created the body mask. Create an avatar mask, open that, and I can define which limbs I'm going to be using and not. So I'm going to say, look, I'm going to use the upper body. Okay, I'm going to select them all. Okay. Select them all, and I'm not going to use the lower body. Okay. Green, not this, not this, not this, not this, and this not. And then here. I say the mask, and I select that mask. Okay, and that's why we have the result of having our character here standing still. And when I press the fire button, I only do it to the upper body, and when I run, also to the upper body. Okay, and then we maybe press the Boolean operator for jumping. Okay, I have my jump animation here, and I can shoot my character. Okay, so this was like an overview. How we can create in Unity games, make scenes, create interactivity, use particles, use animations, and export it. I'm going to see it later on. We're going to talk about exporting here. That's how we can make a game. Okay. For exporting, tomorrow, Corey Johnson will take it a much step further and really talk about how we can export this to Windows 8 app, the Windows Store, and also to the phone. And to build it, you're going to go to the build settings, and then the only thing you have to do is put it here to the Windows Store app, and you click build, okay, and we pick a location where we want it, okay, so we're going to create a folder for that, okay, and I'm going to say a final game, and we're going to select the folder, and we're going to build it. So it's building the game now, and I'm going to create a Visual Studio project. And then we can open that and build from there. And that's basically it. So it's a very easy procedure. Okay. Correct. So still building here. There's a lot of objects here. Okay. And then we have here, I should have somewhere the folder where I play. I forget now where I placed it. I hit final game and open it. Okay. And in the configuration, I'm going to put it to x86. Okay, close this. I'm going to build and run it now. Okay. And there we have it. So it's starting now. And yeah. So this was a quick overview on how to make games with Unity. I invite you to come back tomorrow. Corey Johnson and Randy Spahn will take it much deeper. And there will be also people from the community talking about the current games on the Windows Store. Okay, and I'm going to bring it down. And I'm going to open it for... I'm going to scroll down to the last slide here. And open it for questions, and if you have questions, feel free to later on to email me also. I went back to the okay, where's the play button here again? Here, okay. So feel free to contact me on Twitter, also on Facebook, LinkedIn, my email. So yeah, feel free to ask your questions. I would say to Corey, come up on stage, but you broke your, I know you didn't break your leg, but he damaged it. Yes?
This might be more for Corey, but yeah. Sorry you broke your leg. Windows 8 is one of the first platforms to democratize stereoscopic with DirectX 11.1, so Unity is multi-platform. How can we build that bridge so that we can take advantage of Windows 8 stereoscopic using Unity? How do you guys handle stereoscopic before? Do you have any plans on implementing that for Windows 8, or is it already there?
Right now, you can do stereoscopics just by doing two render textures, and you can get there now. Like I said, DirectX is close enough. I don't know. DirectX 11.1 will be coming later.
Can you hear me? Hello. All
right, I got the thumbs up. All right, so yeah.
I've done stereoscopic project before with the NVIDIA graphic cards, and that worked out of the box. So,
yeah, the question, all right, with Windows 8, I mean, my Surface Pro, just about any plug-in HDMI 1.4 shoots out, right? I mean, you don't have to do much more once you set up your DX render, right? So it's very different from how it was even last year, where you need to have all these specific drivers and all these things.
Yes?
Is there a way to print out the output of the code that you generate? So what if you want to hand tweak the direct access? I want to get down there and use some ASM. In other words,
Not currently. The way we build is that, like the engine, we have an engine assembly, and then we build all your code into an assembly, and then we have all your resources built together, and then we package those together. There's a lot you can do in what we kind of refer to as a trampoline. So you get the solution, and there's a lot in the kind of the glue code that does that all together. The engine code is already pre-optimized for you. You do have access to all the shaders, though. Like, all the shaders that we come with are all open source, so you can open them up. And a lot of times you'll want to, if you want a very specific effect and you sometimes we'll have like a couple different things going on. If you just want one thing, you can just go edit script, optimize the shaders there, and then put them back into the scene. And you can do a lot of optimizations there. I wouldn't say there's any areas that you need to from your game or 3D experience that you're trying to scope. I mean, I've seen the full gambit of everything be done. In the case of DirectX 11.1, it's just that we had started doing DirectX 11 last year and implemented it, and we just haven't gotten back around in the cycle to update it. So I wouldn't say it's a complexity thing. I'm trying to think. I mean, there's nothing I could say from the standpoint of, you know, I want to do this. Should I not do it because I'm using Unity? Absolutely not. Like, there's a way to do everything you need to do. So, I mean, things like, you know, if you wanted to rip out PhysX, which we use for our physics solution, and use Havok or something, that would be really difficult. That's not to say that you can't write your own physics and from code and do it and stuff like that. But I mean, as a rule, like I would never tell you you can't do something in Unity, and you shouldn't try to do something in Unity. So.
This might be spoiler question for tomorrow, but once you've done the build and you've pushed it out on my Visual Studio 2012 solution, that solution structure, at a certain point I can add XAML elements on top of it, I'm assuming, so I can add Windows. Is there any code interaction I can do from certain classes or whatever? And is that targeted, will that be a C# project? Will it be a C++ with a service render target? What exactly is the render display?
That is a little bit of a spoiler, but you can, when you select a build, you can kind of choose what solution you want spit out. And then from there, I mean, there are some features that some Windows 8 features that we don't have built in natively to Unity, and that you will have to do there on like at the YAML level. We have some examples of how to do that on our site somewhere. I'll have to provide the link tomorrow. Yeah. So I'm going to go here first. Yeah.
How do you handle some schedule you could say next month, people can come out the controller. They can detect your fingers. And how do you have any API to work with?
So the question is, how do we handle third-party hardware, and specifically input? Since you mentioned Leap Motion, I can use them as an example. So we have our plugin system. So with our pro license, you can write a native plugin and go to, in this case, C# or C++, and do whatever you need to do. Usually what happens with third party is they come to us and want to integrate with us, so we work with them to write a plugin that supports their hardware. And Leap Motion case, I actually work with them, and they have a really nice package. You basically drop it in, they have a really nice API to just say, give me my touch inputs. So it is, in this case, in the case of input, it will be decoupled from Unity's input system. We're looking at possibly extending our input system so third parties can say, hey, I want to map this particular movement of my hardware, my input, to that. But in this case, right now, we just have the kind of the standard set of inputs that we have. And for things like Leap Motion, where it's like a 3D input, you would just need to detect that you have a Leap Motion installed or have like an option to turn it on, and then check for their API to pass in And then you can drive all the same things with the leap motion input that you could with any other script.
So going back to the bit about generating the project for Visual Studio, if I do make changes there and then rebuild my solution from Unity, what happens to my changes that I built in Visual Studio?
There is an append mode that you'll want to make sure you use.
Thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time out.